David Ellis, and with me, as always, is the wonderful West Coast man, Alex Hogg.
Hello. How are you, Dave?
I am doing sensationally. It's much better today than it was last week. The cold weather seems to have somewhat subsided for a little bit.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's the complete opposite. This week, it's bucketing down.
Oh, bugger, you're kidding me.
Yeah.
Oh, well, is what it is, I suppose.
It is.
Last week we basically shot the shit, really, didn't we, about all the follow-up we had from all the previous episodes, and then we talked about metal and prog music in the media, basically, and how it's not so much on the fringes of society. We got any follow-up from that this week, or do you reckon we covered pretty well covered it all?
I think we've covered it all. We sort of cleared the decks of the follow-up in last week's follow-up extravaganza.
We should probably start this episode with a little bit of news. So at the end of last week, I mentioned that we were going to change things up a little bit, do it bi-weekly and so on and so forth. And one of the things that we are going to implement is a news element to the show. Now, this week, there isn't a whole lot of news around that I could find that was, you know, relatively relevant that had occurred in the last 7 days. However, one thing I did want to talk about relatively quickly is a new release from Coheed and Cambria. Now, have you taken a listen to this?
Yeah, I had a bit of a listen to this earlier in the week. Ooh. And it's great. It certainly sounds like, I mean, the last record they did wasn't a concept record, as far as I can work out. It was sort of a collection of songs. But it sounds like with this record, they're going back to their roots and going back to the big concept with the all the orchestration and things that they were doing. And the opening track to this one sounds fantastic.
Doesn't it? The actual opening track, I'm going to play just a tiny little snippet of it now, just for everybody so they can hear a little tiny bit of it. This is The Dark Sentence Up by Coheed and Cambria. This is just about 20 seconds or thereabouts. Sounds like one of those tracks that is gonna go off something fierce.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if they get around to playing the whole thing live, which I'm assuming they probably will on the forthcoming tour.
I would hope
that
so.
That one's gonna kick ass.
I just think it's going to be such an exciting album. It does come out a little bit later this year. I believe it's out in October, 5th of October or something like that. So we'll probably get it here in Australia, I don't know, in 2020 or something. thank the Lord for YouTube and Spotify.
Absolutely.
The other little piece of news I wanted to just run very quickly, as some of the listeners know, Hoggy and I are the heads of the fan club for Dream Theater in Australia and New Zealand, and there's a cool little ARG that's popped up to do with their new album. Have you checked this out, Hoggy?
I have not checked this out. I wish I could, but I've been very, very busy this last couple of weeks, having just got back from holidays. So why don't you explain to us what this one's all about?
So it seems to be sort of an online treasure hunt where you've got, for example, an image gets posted, and then in the image, you've got something in the code, and then you've got to find that and you follow that, sort of like a trail of breadcrumbs all the way to the end. Now, there are people around who know the answers to this. Obviously, there are people contributing to it. Hoggy and I actually don't know anything about it. We're with you guys on this one, so I'm actually trying to decipher some of this stuff as well. There are people who are much better at this sort of stuff than I am. I'm just sort of along for the ride with this. But to give you an idea, the first picture was a picture that came up. It's probably one that you've already seen, a picture of a piece of paper and such, and it says DT members can share a link which redirects to their social media accounts. And if you take the beginning of the link and you basically rewrite it, so it's HTTPS, and you move the letters around and such, it makes a different link, and then that links to a different Twitter, and on the Twitter there's some cool stuff in there, and then there's passwords to do with that to lead you to the next thing and so on and so forth. It is really exciting as a Dream Theater fan, as a massive Dream Theater fan, because it seems the last couple of albums, it's just been them putting music out. Now they're kind of really engaging with the audience. And we haven't really seen this level of engagement since probably Octavarium.
But they did a bit of this with the last record as well, when they had that whole section before the Astonishing came out, where they were trying to sort of divide the fan base into two different teams. I forget what the names of the teams were. I should know this. If I was into that whole sort of Game of Thrones sort of esque type thing, maybe I paid much more of an interest to it. But because I'm not, I don't.
Yeah, it didn't really seem to do anything though. The only thing it gave us was like a Spotify playlist, and that was about it. This seems to actually be really engaging stuff, and there's a whole bunch of different puzzles. I think they're up to about puzzle 4 or something at the moment, and they've got like pictures of birds and such. For example, low resolution image of a dead sparrow is one of them. And the text above to the right of the sparrow is "Watch the sparrow falling" verse from "Pull Me Under." But there's more to it. So if you take the photo and you drop it into Photoshop and such, and you actually have a look at some of the light and air at dark areas, there's different IP addresses embedded in the codes and all that. So it is really cool.
Someone's gone to a lot of effort to do this one.
It's a massive, massive effort from the Dream Theater community, I believe, as a whole. I know there are guys... I'm not going to say who, but there are a few around who know the answer, know what's coming at the end. And as I mentioned, both Hoggy and I are not these people, so please don't bombard us with emails or tweets asking us what the answer is, because we don't know. But it is really cool. You should definitely check it out. I'm thinking we need to get on to the part of the podcast that's going to make everybody jealous, which is where we're talking about what you've been doing for the past 5 weeks. Now, just so the listeners are aware, Hoggy has been over in Europe on a massive tour of his own, following a whole bunch of festivals and seeing a whole bunch of gigs. I won't say what they are. So the previous episodes that you've heard were actually recorded prior to him leaving, with the exception of the genetics interview episode that was recorded that week. This is the second show that we have done since he's been back. So why don't you tell us all about it? And if I have any questions to ask during the time, I'll ask.
So what I laughingly referred to between my fiance and I as our summer of Prague started with King
Summer
Crimson.
Summer of George.
What was that, sorry?
It's a summer of George. Sorry.
Well, actually, last summer was the first summer of Prague, because last summer we went to see Phil Collins, and we went to the Be Prague My Friend Festival in Spain. Mm-hmm. So this one is actually the summer of Prague 2, which we subsequently subtitled Prague Harder, just because we can, because we're massive nerds. So we went to see how many shows? 4 King Crimson shows in Poland, 2 in Poznan and 2 in Krakow.
Mm-hmm.
The second King Crimson show, they were actually looking – they have an arrangement where you get to help the merchandise team sell tour programs. So for the second night in Poznan, my fiancé and I did that. As a result, we were actually invited into the pre-show chat that they have with some members of the band and the band's manager, a man I've called out before, David Singleton. So the band's manager and Jacko, they both name checked the first night of the tour, which was the first show in Poznan. They name checked that show as the greatest King Crimson show that they personally had ever been involved in. Reading between the lines, watch out for that one. That might appear as a live CD at some point in his life. Now, to add to that, my personal favorite King Crimson show was the first show that they did in Krakow, which was the third show we went to. They played three nights in Krakow. We only went to the first two because the third one we were flying on to the next show, to our next series of shows. The first song that they played Lark's Tongues in Aspic Part 1 and Part 4.
Mm-hmm.
Then Moonchild, The Court of the Crimson King, Indiscipline, Circus, Lizard, Islands, Lark's Tongues in Aspic Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then they played Discipline, Cadence and Cascade, which is a new one, which is a really, really strange track. It's really, really good. Then there's something that's laughingly referred to as Fairy Dust of the Drumsons, which is basically a three-way drum trio performance by the three drummers. Radical Action 3, then Meltdown, Radical Action 2, which are all new tracks. And then something that's referred to as Level 5, but it's actually described on the set list as Lark's Tongues in Aspic Part 5. Then they played Breathless, Epitaph, and they finished the show as they did with every other show on the tour, 21st Century Schizoid Man.
See, I'd be happy with just that.
There's a song that they did play on the second night, actually, which is The Construction of Light, which is that is absolute madness, that song. The what is going on there. All eight members of the band are all playing at a different time signature during a section of that song.
That's
It is music. It is. It. You might think it might sound like musical chaos, and it sort of does at various points, but it's a very carefully designed chaos. I urge anyone who is a prog fan and a music fan, even if you're not necessarily a fan of King Crimson themselves, go and see them live. I urge you to do it. They are unbelievable. And then we moved on from them. We went and saw two shows by Roger Waters in Amsterdam.
Lucky sod.
Yeah.
Not that I haven't seen
shows,
him, but
one of those shows, actually, we were front row.
Oh, nice.
They were filming that show too, so fingers crossed you probably might see me on the DVD.
Yeah, there you go.
And for that night as well, we had two friends of my fiance who have not seen Roger Waters. One of them had seen Roger Waters before, but her boyfriend had not. And I think he had just as much fun watching the show as he did watching us. And yeah, how animated we were during Pigs, three different ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably the most anti-Donald Trump song. Well, what's turned into an anti-Donald Trump song with, mm-hmm. Him as a baby and, him driving a toy car and all sorts of funny things.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I saw Waters here, there was the flashing of all of his quotes on the screens. And it ended with Donald Trump's a pig.
Yep.
Or Trump is a pig. I can't remember.
Trump is a pig.
Trump is a pig on the end.
Same thing again in Amsterdam. Obviously, it was in Dutch.
Oh.
Trump is a pig is in Dutch. Well, the Trump is a pig was in Dutch, but all the quotes were in English.
Yeah.
So, why do I have all these people coming from all these shithole countries? And, if Ivanka wasn't my daughter, I'd probably be dating her and all those sort of quotes.
Yeah.
And then there'd be cannons that went off at the end with lots of bits of paper that said resist on it.
Yeah. Wasn't it good?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Man, like the ending, I think I've said this before on the podcast, I walked out of there and my dad said to me, he said, I haven't seen you smile like that in a long time. And it was so good. It wiped the floor with anything else I've seen. So you saw it twice, and I think you saw it here, didn't you, as well?
Yeah, I saw it as well here in Perth.
Mm.
Just the one show because they only played here once.
Yes, yeah, I think he played two nights in Sydney, but I only went to the one. So
yep, the shows that were here in Australia were exactly the same as they were in the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
So the same production, the same songs, the same everything.
Yep.
Then from there on, we went to the first of three festivals we went to this summer. Mm-hmm. The first one was the smallest of the three, which was Midsummer Prog Festival.
Yep.
Which is in a tiny little amphitheater in a small Dutch town called Valkenburg.
Yes.
Really nice town, actually. Riverside were headlining this particular show along with Lesoa, which is a local Dutch band. They had an orchestra playing with them, a small 12-piece orchestra. Lazuli, was up next. They were amazing, actually. There was one particular the song they did it right at the very end was all of the members of the band playing one marimba.
Oh, right. And
sort of, yeah, sort of like a, one of those electronic mallet cat things that Neil Peart plays on his drum kit.
Yeah, wow.
All of them playing that, which is fantastic. Amplifier were next. They were a really cool band. If I had one criticism of Amplifier, though, they were too fucking loud, obnoxiously loud. Even with my earplugs in, it was too loud. The Gathering played next. They were really nice. It was a welcome change from just sort of the obnoxious wall of sound that came from Amplifier. Mm-hmm. And then Riverside were the headlining band. They are a progressive metal band from Poland. If those of you out there have not heard of Riverside, I urge you all to go and listen to their new music.
Yes.
To their music. They have a new album coming out, which I think is called Wasteland. It'll be their seventh album. And it'll be the first one of new music since the unfortunate death of their guitarist, Piotr, a couple of years ago now.
Right.
He died very suddenly of a heart condition. But the band officially exists as a three-piece, but when they play live, they have another gentleman who plays guitars in Piotr's place. Mm-hmm. He does a really good job. The highlight of the concert for me, though, was Maroš Duda, who is the frontman of the band, decided he was going to give us all a teaser from the new album. And so he got out his phone and everybody's sitting there going, oh, yes, we're going to hear some stuff from the new album. And then proceeds to play a section from Porcupine Tree, Trains.
Oh, that's too
and
good.
Then once the sort of penny drops and everybody laughs, he says, in this next section, I was trying out some different voices. And, tell me and see if this works. And then he plays it, and it's Metropolis Part 1 by Dream Theater. Well done, sir. Well done.
I think that's a good frontman, too. Someone who can pull that stuff off and not proceed to annoy the shit out of everyone, you know?
I really enjoyed that Prog Festival. It was a seated gig in a stone amphitheater. To be honest, though, after about 6.5 hours of sitting down on a stone amphitheater, my ass was about ready to go to sleep.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
No, not at all. So it was really, really good. I'll be certainly keeping an eye out next year to see who's playing that one. I'll probably end up going back. It was fantastic.
It's all right. We can do another one of these in 12 months' time.
just the annual jealousy special, I think we'll just call it. I'll sort of elaborate on this now, but I don't think I could ever do a trip this big again. I know that is the worst, the worst of the worst first world problems, but this one was, I mean, I was overseas for 41 days, and in that time I saw something like 25 or 30 different bands play. Obviously, some of them are in festivals and they're on one day, but yeah. It seems inevitable that if I'm going to Europe, I'm going to see Marillion. Saw them play twice, once in Utrecht, once in Harlem.
Right.
I've spoken enough about Marillion on this podcast. I'm just going to completely jump over those two gigs. Both of them were fantastic. As they always are when they play live. Mm-hmm. One of them was a standing gig that was at Tivoli in Utrecht, and the other one was a seated gig that was in Harlem. Personally, I prefer standing gigs to seated gigs. The seated gigs, especially for Brilliant, kind of suck the life out of the place.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter what band it is. If it's a seated gig and it's not someone like, you know, an old school rocker or something like that, if you don't have the option to stand up, it's a bit of a problem.
All the King Crimson gigs were seated gigs, actually. That seems to work because that's probably the closest thing to a sort of almost a presentation of classical music. So the next concert that I went to see, I'm going to name check this one as the biggest surprise of the summer, which was Roger Hodgson. Are you familiar with Roger Hodgson?
Name rings a bell. Why does the name ring a bell?
It's the frontman for Supertramp.
That's why it rings a bell. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So I'm not a particularly big fan of Supertramp. I mean, I know the big hits. You know, everybody knows the big hits of Supertramp.
Everyone knows the big hits of everyone when they're doing
exactly
stuff.
So when you're that big, yeah. But I wasn't necessarily familiar with his solo work. And I'm not going to make any bones about this. I was dragged to this gig. My missus heard that he was touring and it was like, we're going. I was like, okay.
Okay, fine.
But this was a big surprise. I really enjoyed this concert. He is fantastic. He's a fantastic performer live. Mm-hmm. The band that he has is really, really good. It was in a big theater as well. This one was in Rotterdam. You have any questions for me about that one?
What made it so good? I mean, I know he's obviously a front man. So was he particularly engaging with the crowd? Were the songs really good? Did he play any Supertramp stuff?
Yeah, he played a whole bunch of Supertramp. He played Breakfast in America. That's the name of the song.
Right. Okay. Yes.
Breakfast in America. Yeah. He sort of just described it as, this is a song that I sort of wrote one day when I was 19 years old and no one sort of knew what was coming, and they just bust straight into it and everybody got along with it. And then the encores, he played Give a Little Bit and It's Raining Again.
Oh, that would have been good. Yeah.
And also snuck in the old nursery rhyme as well. You know, it's raining, it's pouring, the old man is snoring. He snuck that into the middle of the song, which I don't think the Dutch crowd quite got it, and neither did my fiance as well. But I got it, and I thought it was hilarious. She's like, "What are you?" And afterwards, she's like, "What are you laughing about?" And I'm like, "That's an old English nursery rhyme." It's like, "Ah, okay."
Oh, that's why I don't understand what it is. Carry on, English boy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking through the set list now. He played, out of the 17 songs that he played, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them were not Supertramp songs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was a lot more than I thought it was, actually. I thought it was sort of about 50-50 Supertramp stuff and solo stuff. But there is one song I am going to call out as being particularly good, one of his solo songs. Mm-hmm. It's called Death in a Zoo.
Okay.
It's probably the closest thing to a sort of a progressive rock type sort of epic as it could be.
Sure
It was really, really good. It goes, hey, what would you do caught between death in a zoo? What if your world was stuck in a cage? Would you feel rage, boy? Caught in a crossfire, stung by the cold wind, would it feel lonely? And goes on from there. It is a fantastic song.
Yeah, they are some cool lyrics too.
They are very cool lyrics. Yeah. Roger Hodgson at one point actually was tapped to replace John Anderson in Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, sometime during the 90s he turned it down because he didn't feel like he could step into John Anderson's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
I heartily disagree with him. I think he would have done a fantastic job, but it would have been a terrible move for his career. Because I think we've discussed before, Yes fans don't like any version of Yes that's not fronted by John Anderson.
Yes. I think, as we've discussed before, prog fans in general can be quite pretentious.
Yes.
So
by sheer chance, a couple of weeks before this trip, actually, we heard that Jeff Beck was going to be playing in Barcelona. The day we arrived in Barcelona. He was phenomenal. I'd happily see Jeff Beck play again.
Last week we were talking about the Little River Band, which is one of the albums that I gave you to review. The lead singer from that, Glenn Shorrock, I did an interview with him a few years ago, and he actually mentioned that he thought Jeff Beck was the new Hendrix.
That's an interesting observation.
Yeah, I thought it was...
Considering that Jeff Beck covered 2 Jimi Hendrix songs during the gig.
He said it was very... He thought it was very, very, very good. And he really thought he was actually... What he was doing sonically with the guitar and so on and so forth was ahead of a lot of others, and thought he actually overtook Hendrix in that regard. So interesting that you also say that he's very good. I've never had the pleasure of seeing him, unfortunately. So
yeah, he doesn't tour that much anymore, actually.
No, he doesn't.
Which is a shame. The next was Be Prog, My Friend.
Mm-hmm.
This edition of the festival, I think, was better than the last one, and there were a lot of great bands at the last one, but this one was fantastic.
Because you went last year to Be Prog, My Friend didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Because I remember you writing an article of some kind about it.
Pliny opens the second night, the Australian progressive metal band that we spoke about last week.
Yes.
They were fantastic. I had an interesting conversation with a German guy in the front row next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he found out I was Australian. And he's like, Pliny, they must be really big in Australia. And I sort of said to him, no, I've probably mentioned this on the podcast before, but I'll mention it again. Why do Australian bands have to be noticed overseas before they get noticed here in the mainstream?
I think it goes back to the lack of support for anything in the arts. I've got a good friend of mine that I did my music music degree with. She actually played a show here in Sydney. I think it was on Saturday night. Saturday night or last night, I can't remember. It was one of the two. And unfortunately, I didn't get to go and see it. I was busy. But she went over to Germany and played in a few clubs in Berlin. She did Munich. She did Hanover. I think Frankfurt as well, and did some stuff in the UK and through France and such as well. So she had a full-on European tour. And apparently every night was sold out. Here she's playing in a pub and she can't get people to come. So I think it's also a support of the arts thing. And she's an extremely good vocalist as well. And music's not exactly my type of thing. Even last week at that gig that I played, probably 10 or 12 people there.
Oh, that's just sad.
It is. It's really sad. And this is the girl that I played with has a reasonable following on social media and such. Now, I don't know whether or not she promoted it very heavily, but that's just the support for the arts, and that's the lack of support for the arts in this country. In Europe or in where people actually go out for a gig. And I think that's partly also due to the fact that it's just not as expensive to go out in other countries.
That's a good point. I know a friend of mine, Ron, who runs actually was involved with a Dutch prog streaming service called progstreaming.nl, and I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes. Mm-hmm. He told me he's pretty much stopped going to big gigs and is only interested in going to smaller bands and smaller gigs. Mostly the tickets are about 20 to 25 euros, and he's discovered a lot of good stuff through that, through just going to smaller bands and smaller gigs.
And is that the reason why he doesn't go to the larger gigs? Because he prefers to discover the smaller stuff? Or
yeah, unless it's something he really, really wants to go and see, mm-hmm. he won't shell out the money for it. So going back to Big Prog, my friend, Persephone were the ones who were headlining, they were opening the first day.
Yep.
And they were fantastic. I really enjoyed them. Baroness were next. I've seen Baroness before. They opened for Metallica about 8 years ago when they were here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they did too. That was the Death Magnetic Tour.
Yeah. Death Magnetic Tour, yeah. They were really good. Mm-hmm. The one that I was looking forward to the most on this particular day was Pain of Salvation. Are you familiar with Pain of Salvation?
Yeah, they supported Dream Theater on the second tour.
Oh, of course they did. Yeah. With Mike Portnoy playing drums and the thing. Yeah.
Yes.
They are fantastic. They are a fantastic band.
They're brilliant. They are absolutely fantastic.
Daniel Gilmore, though, is an amazing guitar player, an amazing, fantastic songwriter,
mm-hmm.
and a really nice guy. I actually had a chance to meet them during the they were doing a signing. So I have a poster with Pain of Salvation and Sons of Apollo, who played on the second night.
Fantastic.
All their signatures on it. So mm-hmm. I didn't have that much of a chance to talk to the guys from Sons of Apollo because there was a ridiculously long queue before the signing.
Yep.
Pain of Salvation was a bit smaller. I had a chance to have a photo with them and all the rest of it. A perfect circle with the headliners for this first night.
Oh, man.
Now, you're not going to like this, Dave, but I was actually very disappointed with their performance.
That's actually very upsetting because I saw them here in 2013, I want to say it was 2013, at Soundwave, when Soundwave was still a thing.
Yep.
And that was the same year that Metallica played, and I think they blew Metallica off the stage. That's also because I don't like Metallica, but
Yeah, we all know about your snobbery towards Metallica, Dave.
I've got to be snobby about someone. I mean, come on.
True.
So why weren't they particularly good? What was it that sort of turned you off?
I think the part of it was they played the new album almost exclusively. I don't think they played too much of the old stuff.
Okay.
Which I think pissed a lot of people. I know because I spoke to a couple of people afterwards. Pissed a lot of people off.
Mm-hmm.
They were expecting a lot more of the old stuff.
Yeah, but these people that were pissed off, they do realize that they've just released it, and this is the tour for that album, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is it with fans nowadays where you go to see a band on a tour for a specific album? Let's just take a Perfect Circle, for example. They're doing the current tour for this album, oh, they didn't play something off, you know, emo.
First record.
The first record that I really wanted to hear. It's like you realize that they're not doing greatest hits, right? This is the album that they're touring for. It'd be like Tool releasing a new album and then not playing anything off an emo and everyone getting pissed off. And it's like, well, they're promoting the new album.
I know Iron Maiden, when they were on the touring a new record, I forget which one, but they specifically announced ahead of the tour they will not be playing The Trooper and they will not be playing Run to the Hills because we're out promoting the new album.
Yep.
Their argument was that they didn't want to turn themselves into their own cover band.
Yes.
Which I know several other bands have done that. Looking at you, yes. They've essentially become their own cover band.
Yep.
Because that's all they do. They just run around and they tour the back catalogue and that's it.
Yes. Yep.
So I think a lot of fans were pissed off about that. Also, as well, and I'm not putting you in this category and I'm not necessarily putting this out to any Perfect Circle fans out there, but I found the crowd of Perfect Circle fans at this gig to just be the worst bunch of fangirls and fanboys I've ever heard in my entire life.
This does not surprise me. It was
really
It was the same at Soundwave, but it was somewhat dumbed down. So I ran into a few people that I knew from school in the pit for APC, and they were all okay. There were a couple of people there who were queuing for Metallica, who were in the pit waiting for Metallica. Or Stone Sour, or whoever was later playing on in the day. I kind of can't remember the exact order now. But of the APC fans that were there, they were a bit. I remember one guy turning to me and was like, "Dude, you should sing." I was like, "I'm just happy enjoying things. Like, it's all good, you know." I was there as media for the day. I remember one guy being right on the railing and he was like, "Dude, you should sing. You should be singing all this." It's like, man, I'm here to work, and B, exactly. Yeah, I'm here. A, I'm working, and B, I'm enjoying it. I just don't need to sing my heart out to enjoy it. And you know what? I've had that actually. Now that you mentioned that, I've had that happen in a couple of gigs. I had it happen at COG when I first saw them. I've had it happen. Yeah, I had it happen at the first Dream Theater gig in Sydney. I've had it happen at Porcupine Tree.
Only the first Dream Theater gig, of course, because at the second one, we were the idiots in the front row singing like mad. That was us. Everybody else behind us was probably giving us death stares and, oh, my God, why these guys shut the fuck up? But that was us. We were those people the second time around.
But that being said, I mean, I wouldn't turn to someone and be like, yo, why aren't you singing? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And that was kind of the attitude that I got. So it doesn't surprise me that APC fans are a bit, I mean, probably going to get a letter for this one, but Keenan, I love the stuff he does musically, but he just doesn't come across as like the best kind of person.
Oh, the fact that Maynard, it should be no great surprise to anybody that Maynard's a killer. You've got a guy, everybody's here to see him. Every time he stopped singing, all the fans were cheering. Like, even in between lines of a song.
Really?
And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God, shut the fuck up. Stop. I'm trying to listen to the damn song. And every time he stops singing in between each line, there's a bloody scream that goes up like I'm a fucking Justin Bieber concert.
Oh, that's that's just absurd.
Yeah.
Let the guy finish the song. Cheer at the end of the song if you really want to.
And I felt like turning around and saying, he doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about you. A friend of mine, actually, when I posted about this online afterwards, he said to me, and this is a great line, he said, when has being a fan of a band become a competitive contest?
Oh, you know what? The worst of that, the worst. I went to, I think it was Fogarty. It was the last Fogarty gig I went to. I've seen him every time he's been in Australia that I've been alive, and Dad has seen him every time he's been to Australia, even back when he toured with Creedence, when Creedence came out. And there was a guy at this concert. I was sat down next to him yakking away, and he said, so, you know, you're a bit young to be a fan of Fogarty, aren't you? I said, oh, no, you know, Dad grew me up on some pretty cool stuff, you know, yeah, you know, but you're a bit young, you know. It's like, mate, look, fuck off, all right? like, I grew up on this stuff, you know, I like it, you know. Oh, I've been listening to him for this. I've seen him. And then my dad was getting the shits with the guy at this point. And he said, I've seen him the last four times he's been here. And dad turns around and said, did you see him with Creedence when he came here in 76 or whenever it was? And the guy goes, no. And dad goes, yeah, I was there. I was in the front row. And it was, it's yeah. just, what is with these cock measuring contests? Oh. Can't we just all say, or you know, the one that really pisses me off, what's your favorite song? Oh, this one. Oh, you're not a real fan because you like the new stuff. Fuck off. You asked me what my favorite song was.
This exact experience after the gig.
There you go.
So behind us, behind my fiance and I, we were on the front row and we'd been on the front row all day. Mm-hmm. So Pink Perfect Circle went on at about midnight mm-hmm. and the doors were opened at 4 o'clock.
Wow.
So I've been standing there for 8 hours at this point, mm-hmm. waiting for a Perfect Circle to play. Mm-hmm. The couple behind us, hadn't seen them all day, arrived directly behind us, and then the female, the couple, man and a woman, mm-hmm. she proceeded to have an argument with him about how he should just push this out of the way so they could be in front. And then he said to her, he said, well, no, I can't do that because they've been – I should point out this couple were Australian, by
I was
the way.
About to say they're Australians, aren't they?
Yes. Oh. They were Australian. And he said, no, they've been here all day. You can't just push them out of the way. The concert goes on, blah, 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 blah. Because my fiance is a collector of guitar picks. Mm-hmm. A whole other topic that I'll get into one day. We had been collecting, I think we ended up with four guitar picks at the end of the night.
Yeah,
two
wow.
from one guitarist, two from the other one. We got the two because we were sort of off to, we weren't quite in the middle. We were sort of off to one side. Mm-hmm. So they were easier to catch from one end than from the other. So we had it, my missus has got a sign, a, you know, guitar pick please sign.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were collecting guitar picks and we showed it to one of the other guitarists and he threw a guitar pick at us.
Awesome.
This obviously pissed the bloke off behind us because he's like, oh, you're not real fans. You're just here to collect guitar picks. So you're not a real fan. I think I'm sorry. And who are you? And then his missus chimes in, who decided to push past me and clamber up on the railings and yell at the drummer for a drumstick, who wasn't handing out drumsticks to anybody, I might add. Never mind.
And who probably couldn't hear her from stage to the barrier.
Yelling at Tex, whoever was around, to the drumstick, and then proceeds to accuse me of not being a real fan. And I said to her, uh-huh, and who are you? And she's like, I'll name you a song. I was like, okay, fine. And I named half a dozen songs from the new record.
Yeah.
And then she said to me exactly what you said. Oh, that's just from the new record. You know, you don't know the band. You don't know the old stuff. There's always these fucking moving goalposts with these sorts of fans, which I'm sure, I mean, watching two Australians argue on the front row like that must have been hilarious for the Spanish fans standing around us,
you
watching
know,
these two Australians go toe-to-toe like apes.
You know, once upon a time, it used to be, have you heard any of their new stuff? Nah, man, I've only just heard their last album. Oh, man, you're in for a treat. You got to listen to this and listen to this. Like, really cool stuff. But, hey, welcome to the fold. You know,
exactly.
Nowadays, you're not a real fan because you don't know the intricacies of this album. You don't know that Mike Portnoy put a Morse code in that said "eat my ass and balls" in on this album. Like, seriously, like, this is I think fundamental to one of the reasons why prog gets sort of a bad name in the world of snobbery, because you get fucksticks. Like the person that spoke to you or people that have spoken to me at gigs. I was at a speed dating gig the other night, right? A speed dating event. And I get yakking to this girl. And she's like, oh, so, you know, da, 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 da. I said, what sort of music do you listen to? Da, 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 da. And she goes, oh, I'm a big, I really like a genre called prog. I don't know if you know what it is. I said, yeah, I know what prog is. It's all good. And she's yakking away. And I said, so who's your favorite band? And she goes, Dream Theater. And I've gone, cool. I said, do you know the Dream Theatre Fan Club of Australia in New Zealand? And she goes, yeah, I'm a member. And I've gone, cool. So do you know who I am? And she goes, and I can see the gears turning in her head. And she goes, you're Dave. And I said, yes, I am. And she goes, oh, I've been listening to the podcast. And I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks. You know, da 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 da.
Hang on. Whoa. You were at a speed dating event mm-hmm. and you managed to bump into one of our own listeners.
I did. Hello, by the way. I won't say your name on air because you might get a bit.
You might be terribly, terribly embarrassed.
Embarrassed about it. Exactly. Whereas me, I like letting people know I'm lonely.
Go on.
We got talking about Dream Theater and, you know, different music and all that sort of stuff. And there wasn't any. It was, so when did you first see Dream Theater? I saw them on their first Australian tour. She was like, I didn't get to see them until the Luna Park gig, And I was like, cool. I said, so were you in the big photo that we took in that? And she goes, no, I wasn't. She joined after that. And I was like, okay, no problems at all. But there was none of this, I've been seeing them longer for you and I've been listening to them more than you. And no. And even she told me some stuff about a couple of the albums, some facts that I didn't know. And I'm pretty across Dream Theater. Like, I know a reasonable amount. But when she told me those, I wasn't like, well, do you know that? It was like, cool. I actually didn't know that. That's a really cool thing, you know? Whereas you get these people now who literally all it is a cock measuring contest.
I've been around a long time credentials.
The chick I played with the other week. The chick I played with the other week, right? Talk about diva material. She said to me, we were playing a cover of a song. It's got a really weird little hooky bit and it sort of comes out of the chorus. She thinks it's part of the chorus. I don't think it is. I think it's part of the next verse because the lyric actually leads directly in. And she said to me, listen, trust me, when you've listened to it as much as I have and sung it as much as I have, I know what it is. And I'm sitting there, I'm going, I could pull rank and file at the moment and say, you don't know theory, you don't know this, I have this, I've got a music degree. I was just like, nah, fuck it. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
There's no point in doing cock measuring.
Yep.
And it was just all that sort of stuff. There's this diva mentality around with a lot of people when it comes to a lot of different things. And I'm just waiting for the day when people realize that, you actually have a better conversation with someone when you say, hey, that's really cool. I didn't know that. What other facts do you know? You haven't heard that. So have you heard any of the old stuff or have you just heard the new album and you're like a new convert to APC? Wouldn't have that been a different conversation with that woman if she had have said, so have you heard any of the old stuff or are you just like, did you just hear the new album and you were like, man, I love it and I got to be here?
Yeah.
You know, I just, no, anyway, sorry, I'm ranting. I'm just going to finish worry.
I started it. The other thing is, well, now that we're talking about A Perfect Circle and their attitudes toward photography and filming, I was genuinely surprised, and I mean really, truly genuinely surprised how many people were filming the gig. There was a guy a couple of spots along from me on the front row who had some sort of, I don't know what the hell it was. It was like I don't know if it was hooked to his Apple Watch or something, but he was recording the whole gig. Nobody came in. Nobody kicked him out. Nobody told him, you can't put that away. Which, given Maynard's attitudes towards people who want to take photos at the show and people who want to film stuff, I was stunned. I was just waiting for this guy to get kicked out.
So I'm wondering whether or not I've been thinking about that for a little while, actually. I wonder whether or not that is Maynard in general or if that's only for Tool, because I can remember stacks of people taking photos of stuff with APC and Pucifer, no problems at all. Tool?
So it's a Tool thing.
I don't know if it's a Tool thing or if it's a Maynard thing, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was a straight up Tool thing because they're more, laser shows and lights and it's more about the experience. Whereas the other two bands are kind of, a rock band kind of thing.
Yeah, there was definitely less staging and less lasers and stuff. At this one, at The Perfect Circle.
And it wouldn't surprise me if it was something to do with Alex Gray as well, who's the artist who does a lot of stuff for Tool.
He doesn't want his stuff sort of being shared around all over the place.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I've actually got one of his tapestries hanging on my wall. I really like Alex Gray. It's really, really cool stuff.
So that was day one of Big Prog, my friend. Second day we had Pliny opening.
Pliny was really heavily referenced in that that episode we did with Genetics.
Yeah,
we interviewed. They absolutely adore the guy, and I don't blame them.
He is fantastic, and the band that he has put together, they were fantastic. So the next band up at Big Prog, my friend, were a Norwegian progressive rock band, Gazpacho.
Yes.
They were really good, actually. I have heard of Gazpacho around the name. They're quite – they've opened for Marillion, I think, at one of their fan weekends at some point several years ago.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for, but they were really good, actually. I quite enjoyed their stuff. I had to leave halfway through their set, actually, because that was during the signing for Sons of Apollo.
Oh, no.
Who were playing, but the signing wasn't that far away from the stage, and I got all the way back to the front row again, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Sons of Apollo were next. We've spoken about Sons of Apollo already.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if you've seen this, but I hope I'm not talking out of school here, but I do remember several members of the extended Dream Theater fan club administration were quite negative towards this album.
Yes.
I cannot honestly see what on earth they're talking about.
I tend to actually – I like the album itself. It's actually nice to hear Sheridan again. I'm not the – not that I don't like the album. I do like the album. It's a very different take, and at least there's light and dark in it, unlike there was with Mike's previous project. Was it Winery Dogs or
– Yeah, the Winery Dogs.
No, well, Adrenaline Mob. Sorry, Adrenaline Mob is the one I was looking up.
Yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy Adrenaline Mob. I thought it was a bit too
– flat chat all the time?
Yeah, there was that also as well. I think they sort of fell into a couple of really terrible rock cliches as well couple of times. It was a bit too –
Yeah.
Bit too much like on that.
But I liked it.
I don't think Mike's actually part of Adrenaline Mob anymore, isn't he?
No, he's not.
He's left that band now.
Yeah, that's why he's doing the new stuff with Sons of Apollo.
Yeah, because Sons of Apollo is now meant to – the idea is that it's not meant to be like a super group side project. It's meant to be the main band.
Mm, that's right, yeah.
It's going to be the big – it's going to be the main thing for those guys now.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you look at the I don't think they could have assembled a better lineup, frankly.
Yeah, no.
You've got Derek, you've got Billy Sheehan on bass, you've got Jeff Scott Soto on vocals, who does a fantastic job and has an amazing range, and then you've got Bumblefoot on guitar and vocals.
The only thing that if I were Mike Portnoy, if I were Portnoy, the only lineup change that I would make to that band is Bumblefoot. I'm actually not a massive Bumblefoot fan. I find him a bit like there's nothing that I really like it, but I would probably replace him with Eric Gillette. He's a fucking good guitarist, man.
He's a great musician all round. Guitar, keyboards, bass, drums, vocals. He can play everything.
Exactly. And obviously he plays with Neil Morse, so and he
when he auditioned for Neil Morse's backing band, it wasn't yet the Neil Morse band. When he auditioned for Neil Morse's backing band, he auditioned for every single slot that was available. Guitar, bass, keyboards, and drums.
Yep.
The drums one, well, that was kind of obvious that Mike was going to get that one.
Yeah.
everything else was up for the bass. Randy George has been playing with Neil Morse for quite a long time, so I think that one was pretty well sorted out, but everything else was open.
But that's the only real lineup change I would probably make if it were me, only because I saw him with the Shattered Fortress tour, and that absolutely blew me away. Like, that was so good. Is such a monster of a player. And as I mentioned, I'm no huge Bumblefoot fan, which I'm sure I'm going to get a few angry emails about, but oh well.
Possibly.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed that show. I thought they were fantastic. And I hope I know Mike has talked about trying to get Sons of Apollo to play in Australia. I do hope so. I really hope that they're able to come to Australia.
I would like them to, but the question is, where are they going to play at this?
I reckon it'll probably be on the same scale as the Shadow Fortress tour, where they play similar sort of arenas.
Yeah, Metro kind of thing.
Yeah, the Astor Theatre here in Perth, that sort of thing.
Yeah, maybe so.
We do digress. Steve Hackett was headlining on the second night.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he of Genesis fame.
Yes,
and he played all of the big Genesis hits.
Awesome.
You know, Supper's Ready, Dancing with the Moonlit Nights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Next, during this show as well, there was a really and I kind of exchanged a bit of a look with Steve Hackett on stage about this one. There was an American guy in the second row who was obviously a huge Genesis fan, and he was singing along at the top of his lungs. In front of him was an older Spanish guy who you could see as well that he was a big Genesis fan and had been listening to it since who knows when, probably back in the 70s, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, neither of the two of them shared a common language, not, but judging from the heated discussions that eventuated, I could pretty well guess what the conversation was. American guy doesn't understand what he's talking about. Da-da-da-da-da, the American guy gets kicked out. I could sort of understand it, you know, guy wants to see Steve Hackett play and, you know, all he's got is some loud American bellowing in his ears.
Yeah, I get that, but you are at a gig. It's not like it was a private moment for him and Steve Hackett, you know what I mean? Like, you are, it's part of seeing live music is people singing along and all that sort of stuff. So,
especially in Spain.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he talked about this, but when I saw the Shattered Fortress, everybody, all of the Spanish fans were singing along with Shattered Fortress stuff, which is perfectly, you know, the Dream Theater songs, perfectly fine, perfectly acceptable. But singing along to the instrumental parts as well was something that started to test my patience.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, it's obviously
it's a cultural thing
as well. It is a cultural thing because when I was at Madcore Festival in Madrid, Jack White was playing, and I was a bit skeptical as well, but I actually rather enjoyed it. Anyway, he closed his set with that one White Stripes song.
Yeah,
because there is only one. Yeah, I'm not going to get any angry emails about that at all.
Not at all.
And all of the fans were singing along with the main riff too, you know, la, 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 all the way through the whole fucking song.
I could understand that. That I get.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right, because that makes sense. Because he does do very singable riffs.
Yes, 100%. I don't quite know how it would go if you were trying to sing the unison solo from Blind Faith. So those, is it only 2 days, the Be Prog My Friend?
Yeah, it's a two-day festival with five bands on each day.
Okay.
There were two other bands that appeared after A Perfect Circle was another band called Aranzu Pazuzu, I think is how you pronounce it. And on the other night was Burst.
Yep.
They got back together, did a reunion show. I didn't stay for either of those because, frankly, after 9.5 hours of standing up, I'm exhausted and want to go home.
Of course, yep.
So we left before both of those. So I don't really have anything to comment about those two bands, so I didn't see them.
Now, you've got the next one here, which is a comment, and I find it very interesting. Guns N' Roses' biggest disappointment.
Yes.
What was so disappointing about it?
So Guns N' Roses were playing at a massive they were actually – I think the stadium they were playing in was the stadium that Barcelona used for the 1992 Olympics.
Oh, right. So they're playing over a tannoy, were they?
They were playing over a tannoy. And this particular tannoy sounded like it had been hit with a big baseball bat.
Oh.
It was awful.
No.
The band themselves, I mean, and this is the so-called reformed lineup, even though half of them still aren't there, they were playing really, really well. Axl's voice was in top form. They were all fantastic, but the sound was fucking awful. To the point that I actually gave up halfway through the gig and stopped paying attention.
Wow.
I came back to it. Slash had a solo spot. Before they played Sweet Child of Mine.
Yep.
Also, as well, Guns N' Roses played for about 3.5 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
What did they play? Appetite for Destruction four times over?
No. They started with It's So Easy.
Okay.
Then they played Mr. Brownstone. After that, the sound was so muddy I couldn't tell one song from the other. The song that I thought was November Rain actually wasn't November Rain because but the sound was so bad they couldn't even get the piano right.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'll put the set list in the show notes so you can see how long this show was. But there were 31 songs that they played.
That's and their average song length is about 4.5-5 minutes. So
something like that. Yeah, there were a couple of extended sections as well.
Yep.
And quite a few covers.
Really?
Yeah, they played Wichita. They did a cover of Wichita Lineman, of all things.
Huh.
obviously there were several covers that they were kind of expected to play. I mean, Knock It On Heaven's Door, for example.
Of course. Let's be honest, that's basically a Guns N' Roses song. It's Roses song.
Yeah. They also played The Seeker by The Who. Great cover, but the sound of that gig was just absolutely awful. Oh, they actually did Live and Let Die?
Yeah. Huh. Though that was on one of their greatest hits albums from memory.
Oh, okay. Yeah, with all the other covers they did on that particular album. Yeah. No idea. I think at that point I'd given up.
Yeah.
Because the sound was just... It's the worst... I mean, worst sound of any gig. Yeah, I'm going to call it worst sound of any gig I've ever been to in my entire life.
Wow. That makes it bad, very bad.
And this was a gig that was promoted by Live Nation. You know, this is one of the biggest promoters in the world. And for them to have such a bad PA system, I couldn't believe.
So was it just a simple fact that everything was just too fucking loud?
Possibly. Or it was just a really, really old, knackered sound system.
And the next band that you've got listed here is one that I saw here with The Living End supporting many, many years ago. The Rolling Stones.
Yes.
What did you think?
I really enjoyed the Rolling Stones, actually.
Hmm.
I thought, I'm not a particularly big Rolling Stones fan. I mean, in the age-old sort of classic rock thing, Stones versus the Beatles.
Beatles. Yeah.
it's the Beatles for me. But they were really, really good. Okay. And the sound, even though they were playing a massive, I mean, there must have been... I'm going to put a conservative estimate on this one and say there were probably 150,000 people at this show. And they were playing a big outdoor thing. The sound was top notch.
Really?
Like it was listening to a record at home. And so to go from one gig, you know, the Guns N' Roses, where it sounded like a cheap cast area that had been hit with a baseball bat, to 2 days later going to see the Rolling Stones, and the sound was crystal clear. That's how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we were a long, long way away from the stage. There was no chance of being front row for this one. No chance. Front row tickets, I think, were going for about 500 euros a shot.
And when you get to that stage of your career, I suppose you can charge whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. Well, I heard secondhand that Michael Gudinski, the Australian promoter for the Rolling Stones shows, lost money on the tour they did here.
Really?
Yeah, because the Rolling Stones charge so much.
And you've got one more listed here.
Yes.
Which is the Mad Cool Festival. Now, we touched on this a little bit earlier where there was a bit of a scandalous moment where someone decided not to play and told people 5 minutes before they were supposed to finish.
Yes. Massive Attack decided that they were just not going to play tonight. Apparently, allegedly, according to the band, and this we are now about 2 weeks after the gig at time of recording, the band Massive Attack still have not released an official statement as to why they didn't turn up and play.
Wow.
So the promoter has come out and told everybody why they didn't play.
Which was?
Apparently Franz Ferdinand were playing too loudly on the other stage and they wouldn't have been able to hear themselves play, so they decided, nope, we're not playing.
They don't have in-ear monitors?
Apparently they do have in-ear monitors, but apparently that was still too loud.
Yeah, that sounds to me more like someone overdosed and they just didn't want to tell anyone.
Well, originally, this was the thing. Originally, the original statement released by the band was due to unforeseen travel arrangements. That was what was posted on one of the forums. That was quickly debunked within about 5 minutes because somebody said, that's bullshit. I saw one of the band hanging around backstage while I was front row for the gig. There are several videos on Instagram, which I can't find because I don't have an Instagram account, but I was shown by someone standing in the queue behind me the following day, people bottling the stage while they were waiting for Massive Attack to not play.
Wow.
So there were a lot of very, very pissed off people.
I don't blame
Apparently them. The promoter had tried to get Franz Ferdinand to start earlier and finish earlier to get out from underneath Massive Attack. They had also managed to get one of the other the performer that was supposed to play after Massive Attack to not play at all to give Massive Attack an empty space where they could play. And apparently they still wouldn't play. My take on that is that Massive Attack are divas and I will never go to see them play ever again.
Yeah. It's amazing how you can so quickly lose a fan base just by doing stuff like this.
It doesn't take much.
No.
like that. I mean, especially when you pull dick moves like that. It just showed a complete lack of regard for the fans. Compare and contrast, the rest of the bands that I did actually see were really, really good.
Awesome.
Pearl Jam were the ones who were the big headliners. They played on the first night. I'm not a particularly big Pearl Jam fan. My fiancée, on the other hand, is a massive, massive Pearl Jam fan, and they were fantastic. They played really well. Alice in Chains were playing as well.
Ooh, yes.
Again, I'm not a particularly big fan of Alice in Chains, but my fiancée is a very, very big fan.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that show. The album that is scheduled to be released later next month, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Got a new album coming up, but I think they played one or two tracks from the new album.
Oh, right.
Rainier Fog is the name of the new album.
Right.
So I'm going to keep an eye out for that one because I really enjoyed their performance.
The last concert I remember where a band played something new off a new album that hadn't been released yet was at the Sound Relief concerts here in Sydney. There was another one in Melbourne as well, which was for the fire and flood victims that had happened that year. A lot of Australian names. However,
some members of Crowded House turned up with Neil Finn's son Liam to perform a couple of hits.
Yes, they did. I was at the Sydney one, and the Sydney one, the first band on was Coldplay. And then the Hoodoo Gurus, Little Birdie, Architecture in Helsinki, UMI, Josh Pike, Marsha Hines, Taylor Swift, Eskimo Joe, Jet, The Presets, Ice House, and Barry Gibb. The ones that played something new was Eskimo Joe. They played a track called Foreign Land. So it was really weird standing in the Sydney cricket ground, chockers, like shoulder to shoulder with people, and no one knowing anything about the song. No one knew how the song went. No one knew how it sounded. No one knew the lyrics. No one was moshing. No one was dancing or anything. Everyone was just kind of like, we don't know what to do.
Stand there and listen?
Yeah, but that was about it. It was just a really surreal feeling. Was that similar to what happened to yourself?
A little bit, yeah.
Mm.
A little bit. I've heard when Marillion played in a US tour several years ago, they debuted a couple of songs from their forthcoming record at the time, Sounds That Can't Be Made. They played two songs. I obviously wasn't at any of those shows, but I heard secondhand from people that were that same sort of thing. People were standing there very politely listening to the song all the way through and then, you know, raucous applause at the end. We mentioned last week as well the fact that Underworld closed this particular festival on the main stage.
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction to that particular performance wasn't what my fiancée was expecting. Because I was sort of standing there going, cool. That's nice. I should point out as well, Nine Inch Nails were also performing. They played before Underworld.
Yeah.
Nine Inch Nails were there as well. I'm not a particularly big Nine Inch Nails fan. I know I'm going to cop flack from people in the world when they hear this, but I'm not a particularly big Nine Inch Nails fan. Nothing that they did during their performance is going to change my opinion on that one, unfortunately. I'm just not a fan.
Sorry. Oh, really?
I think part of the problem is because I came to Nine Inch Nails much later. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who's a big Dream Theater fan, and when he heard Pink Floyd for the first time, because he'd not heard Pink Floyd before, when he heard Pink Floyd, he's like, oh, yeah, this sort of sounds like Dream Theater. Yep. The reaction is exactly the same, and the three beats of silence is perfect for the reaction.
That hurts. That actually hurts.
I sort of feel the same way about Nine Inch Nails because I've listened to so many bands that were that sound like Nine Inch Nails. They're obviously trying to copy Nine Inch Nails. When I come back to Nine Inch Nails now, I'm like, oh, I kind of heard all this already. As is usual, when you've got big festival gigs like this, there's lots of moshing that goes on.
Yes.
Maybe this is just me being a curmudgeonly old man, but I find when I'm at front row and someone behind tries to stick their hand on the railing from behind me, it's like, no, you're not helping. The way this works is I get to put both my hands on the rail, I stand perpendicular to the rail, and I get to push back.
That's right.
That's how this works. You're putting your hand there, you're not helping. All you're going to do is probably end up with a broken arm.
The amount of times I've been to gigs and I'm there at, you know, to give you an idea, when I saw Tool in 2013 or whatever it was when they came out on their own, I got to the venue at 2:30. I got to the railing, no problems. When the band starts, some half-drunk 6'2" fuckstick
tries to push his way through.
Yep, and I'm not a particularly big guy, so people think they can just sort of walk all over me.
Yeah, just sort of shove you out of the way. Yeah.
Yep, and surprise, surprise, they can't.
Yeah.
Especially,
I was gonna say, you don't even have to be a small guy for that to happen. I've had people try and shove me out of the way at a gig at front row. I'm like, I'm sorry, no. And of course, we're men talking about this. God forbid if you're a woman on the front row. You know, I mean, the stories that my fiance could tell about sort of large Eastern European men trying to push her out of the way so they could be on the front.
Mm-hmm. And this sort of links in, I suppose, perfectly with the gig etiquette side of things, which you've sort of touched on throughout the whole episode.
Yeah.
Like, people, the amount of people I have seen, this is one that really pisses me off. If you're in a mosh pit, right, and there's a really heavy part of a song coming out, say you're seeing Periphery or something, right, and they start playing Icarus Lives, right? Soon as it all drops in, the pit starts moving. If someone falls down, pick them the fuck up. Like, it's not hard. You know, and you know what? Metal gigs is normally fine.
That for me is like the lowest of the low when it comes to if someone falls down in the pit, you pick them up. I've seen this at Meshuggah. I've seen people fall over at Meshuggah concerts, mm-hmm. Lamb of God, Metallica, all the things. Someone falls over immediately. There are like three guys who go down and pick them up.
Yep. And
immediately, straight away. Oh, you okay? Yep, cool. And off you go.
And you know what? I have seen – I went to Limp Bizkit recently, as I think we've discussed before.
Yep.
I saw a chick fall over at Limp Bizkit. Four guys reached down, reefed her straight up, so much to the point that she left the ground. I have been to even Nickelback concerts. I've been to one Nickelback concert, I should say. Not Nickelback concerts. So
in case your prog credentials were going to be called into question.
Do you know what? You know what? On that note, sorry, I'm digressing for a second. Everyone likes to rip on Nickelback, right? Because let's face it, it's the paddle pop lion of rock. Cool. Yep. No issues with that at all. Everyone rips on them. Oh, Nickelback is shit. Their music's shit. You put on a Nickelback song and everyone knows the fucking words.
I think that's because they've just been flogged to death on the radio so much.
I don't think so. Every single time I see someone singing it, they genuinely like it. I don't know anyone who actually genuinely hates them. Everyone likes to rip on them.
It's just a popular thing to do.
I reckon it is. But all of the gigs that I've been to where I've seen someone fall over in the pit because, for example, they're wearing heels that they shouldn't be wearing or shoes that they shouldn't be wearing in the pit.
They're just drunk.
They're just drunk, whatever, and no one goes down to pick them up. It's always the pop gigs. It's the soft rock gigs. It's the indie gigs. It's the dance gigs. I've seen people fall over at raves and things like that, and no one bothers to pick them up. And it's like, for starters, at a rave, it could even be worse because they could be on something.
Yeah,
realize it.
Yeah, that's, you know, you never know what's going on there.
Exactly. And it's just, I mean, gig etiquette, number one, someone falls down in the pit, you pick them up, right? Number one. And then the number two, which is very closely related to number one, is don't be a cunt.
Which means as well, and I've seen various articles talking about this, just because you're moshing, men in the audience, I'm talking to you directly now, mm-hmm. just because there is moshing going on, this is not a free pass to just start grabbing women.
Yes, 100%.
I have seen far too many articles going around at the moment where men think that being in a mosh pit is just a free pass to just grab at whatever you want.
And it
you
is
know,
fucking
Trump, not. Donald Trump style, grab him by the pussy. No. No. This is not. No. It's the not. Other one I was going to say that's fairly well, – is not on that same level, but I would say if an artist has said – like for example, King Crimson in a giant sign at the front of the fucking stage – please do not photograph or film anyone during the gig. Put your phone in your pocket.
Yep.
You've been asked.
Yep.
And you've also been politely threatened as well. If you don't, we'll kick you out.
Yep.
at one of the concerts in Krakow, there was a guy next to me filming what the roadies and stuff they do. They'll flash a torch at the guy filming to try and get him to put his phone away. So imagine basically through the back end of the second half of the set, a torch going off in my face every 20 seconds. I was about ready to grab this guy and throw him over the fucking railings of the balcony. It's like, oh my God, you are pissing off everybody in this entire section. I think a big, some massive Polish guy spoke to the guy in between songs. I heard a loud conversation going on in Polish, and then the torch flashing stopped. So I think somebody behind him said to him, listen, mate, put your fucking phone away. It's like, there is a clip on the internet, which is entirely, it's a very hypocritical clip. And I'm not going to put this in the show notes. People can find it if they want it. Robert Fripp being actively startled when a photography flash went off in his face and he flubbed a guitar part.
That is why whenever you and I do photography in Australia for bands and live music, you do not shoot with flash.
Oh, God.
The amount of times I have been to even local gigs, the guy on the other night when I was playing the other night, the first guy that got up, he was obviously new to the thing, and he starts taking photos. Flash starts going off. Like, really? And the other thing as well is if there's any other photographers there, it ruins their shots.
Oh, yeah, because you've just got this random flash of light going off next to them, which is just going to...
It just washes everything out.
Yeah, overexpose the crap out of everything.
But, you know, I mean, when it comes to gig etiquette, and this is going to be two old men yelling at clouds, I suppose... Yeah, photography and filming. If someone in the band or whomever says to you, please don't film or don't take photos or what have you, put your phone in your pocket. And you know what? You're going to love it a lot more if you watch the gig rather than looking at it through a tiny screen that you are never going to watch again. You're going to watch it twice because you're going to put it onto some social media channel where you're going to basically go back to the cock measuring thing. Oh, look, I saw such and such last night. Wasn't it good?
The other thing as well, I before Marillion play every show, their road manager comes out and basically tells people, it's cool to take photos, but please don't film anything. And he says, all I can see from the back of the stage every night, because he does some of the sound stuff as well, all I can see from the back of the stage every night is your phones. I'm just waiting for the day that someone tries to film something on an iPad right in front of me and just tell them once, put the iPad away. If I have to tell you again, I keep it. And you'll get it back at the end of the concert.
We put up with enough being in a pit, being in a mosh pit, than having to deal with that shit as well. Even as if you're in the photography pit, like I've shot gigs before where you have maybe 3 feet of space to work with.
Oh, yeah. Right? At Big Prog, my friend, there's even less than that because I swear there's probably 25 photographers in there. And because they've got all the, you know, they've got PA speakers and they've got all the things in there, it's usually a pretty crowded space for people to work in to get the shots that they need.
Yep.
And when you've only got 3 songs, you haven't got long.
That's right.
Sometimes it's less, actually, with the prog stuff. For Steve Hackett, they gave, because the first song that he played was about 15 minutes long. I think they gave him the first song and that's it. Out.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we have a hard time as it is as photographers. We don't need to put up with shit from the crowd as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember shooting a gig one time and a guy literally lobbed a bottle of water from the back. This is at the Metro. So from sort of, you know, where the right, you probably don't know, but where the rises start to go up.
I've been to the Metro in Sydney, no, so I don't.
So where the rises start to go up, it's probably, oh, I don't know, 20 meters. 20.
So this guy's bombed a bottle of water from the back of the stage and I assume hit you or one of your photography colleagues in the back of the head.
It missed me by about an inch.
Oof.
Right? And I only realized because it brushed past me on the left, right?
Ooh.
And hit the PA speaker in front of me, exploded and went over me.
Oh, nice.
Right? My gear's waterproof. I don't care. What pissed me off was that I then had to sit through the entirety of the show with a wet fucking T-shirt.
Yep.
And if I could have found the guy afterwards,
I'd have beat his brains in.
Man, with a very heavy camera. You know, like seriously, there is – and not to mention if that had have hit me in the back of the head.
Well, actually, at the all of the festivals that I went to this summer, all the big ones – when we were allowed to bring in water bottles.
Yep.
No water caps. I assume for this exact reason, so you can't fill up a water bomb it at the band.
Correct.
We didn't. You got to pay for water. In European festivals, of course, you have to pay for everything and yes. pay for water.
Yeah, yeah.
On the first night of the Mad Cool Festival, I believe there were some people who had heat exhaustion problems because the second and third night, they were handing out water bottles to everybody.
Mm.
They were like all the people on the front row.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they were handing out water bottles, you know, the security people or whatever. They mm-hmm. they had just pallets of water and they were handing them out. They yeah. take the bottle cap off and hand bottles around to everybody.
Yeah, well, that's what they should be doing anyway. I mean, yeah, they do that here.
They didn't do that on the first night.
Mm. But, so I don't know. It's just, I mean, gig etiquette is such an important thing.
And especially when it comes to big crowds as well.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller the venue, it's, you know, in my experience, is generally not too bad.
Yep.
When you've got big festivals, I mean, there were 80,000 people at every day of the Mad Cool Festival.
Yep.
And there were probably that many again at Guns N' Roses, and there were at least 150,000 people at the Rolling Stones.
And you know what? Gig etiquette also goes to the people who are organising the gigs.
Mm.
So when you have, and I don't know if you've been to the Hall of Industries in Sydney.
No, I haven't.
It's about, I reckon there would have been about 10,000 people there.
Ooh.
Right? You don't move 10,000 people through a 2x2 door.
Oh, my God.
Right? Open the emergency exits and let everyone go out that way.
Yeah.
Like,
they did that at the Guns N' Roses festival, at the Guns N' Roses show, and the Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones is a bit different because that was just a huge, they had different entry points for different people.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were in this section, you came in from this way. If you were in different, you came. So they, I think they had like a dozen different entry points for all the people in this giant area.
Yep.
So it wasn't that bad.
Getting in, I think, is a very different thing, especially if you've got security and such. Different story, right?
Yeah.
Because particularly for festivals and things like that, people come in sort of in dribs and drabs, and it's sort of almost or even a steady stream throughout the day. You don't have, you know, 50 or 60,000 people rocking up all at once.
No, very rare, not at all.
Right? Especially in gigs as well. You very rarely have the whole crowd waiting out the front.
No, no. You don't have that.
At the end of the gig, though, like even the venues in the city, like the Metro, right, they open every single emergency exit to let everybody out and to get them out of the building. They do the same
thing here in Perth as well. When you've got the Astral Theatre, which is not even that big a venue, that you probably only fit 1,000 people in there.
Yep.
Then you've got the big doors at the front and then you've got a door to one side that opens on the street.
Yep.
They open all the doors.
Yep.
Door to the street, everything.
Yep. I remember seeing, that point,
it's like you're getting people out. You just get them out. It's
exactly.
Easy.
I remember seeing the Foo Fighters in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam at the Ziggo Arena in Amsterdam.
The Ziggo Dome. Yeah, yep. I saw Ziggo Roger Dome. Waters play there.
There you go. So I saw the Foo Fighters there. And at the end of that gig, to get everyone out, they opened every emergency exit and they just said, just take the stairs straight down.
Yep.
It took me 3 minutes to get out, and I was on the top floor. I didn't have particularly good seats or anything like that. I was on the top floor at the furthest point away from the street. It took me 3 minutes to get out.
Compare
and contrast to the Above and Beyond gig, right, recently, it took me half an hour.
To get out.
To get out. Because they
opened one door.
They were getting everyone out through one door. It's like, and I ended up saying to the organizers when I walked out, when I finally got out, and I was right at the front as well. So I was one of the last people to get out. And there was a couple of coppers standing there. I said, hey guys, I said, sorry to be, you know, aggressive or anything like that. And I said, but whose idea was it to let everyone out through these doors? Oh, it was the promoter. I said, cool. You didn't think to open all of the emergency exits and just let everyone out? Oh, we don't have the control over that. Yes, you fucking do. You're the police.
Well, I mean, if the fire marshal had turned up, I'm sure he would have had something to say about it.
I would say so.
He or she,
All it would take, and unfortunately in the world that we currently live in, people would do something like this. All it would take would be for some guy at the front to scream gun or bomb or something like that.
It wouldn't even take that. I mean, it doesn't take – I mean, it's an electronica gig. it wouldn't take much for something to malfunction, something to catch fire, and then you really have a good reason to empty the place in a big hurry.
Exactly. And if that had have happened, maybe they would have done that, right?
They probably would have done that, but that's, yeah.
But letting everyone out at the end of the night as well, not to mention as well that there were people there who'd had a skinful, there were people there on numerous substances, yep, despite the sniffer dogs and everything else there, which is another completely different topic. It's just, and this goes, this gig etiquette thing goes to them, goes to the organisers as well. It's about making the gig enjoyable for everyone, but also safe.
And also assuring repeat. I mean, it's good for them as well because it ensures repeat business.
That's right.
I mean, exactly, there was some, I mean, the first night of the Madcall Festival, this is apparently the first, this is the third edition of this particular festival, I think. Mm-hmm. But this is the first one they did at this particular arena or venue or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot bigger than the last one.
Mm-hmm.
After Wheat now, the way it works, like I'm sure with all these other festivals, you had wristbands. And yes, the wristbands had a barcode on it that let you in.
Yep.
We managed to obtain our wristbands. We got our wristbands sent to us through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
On the first day, there were a suspiciously large number of people who didn't have their wristbands. Most of them were Spanish, which I couldn't quite work out, still can't quite work out how they managed to screw that up to have, as far as I can work out, about a quarter of the venue without wristbands.
What?
Okay, people, I don't know, but people, there were stories of people waiting for 7 hours for their wristband.
You're kidding.
Apparently, this is what I mean. I can only vouch for what was on the forums. We didn't have any of those problems because we turned up early. The doors were supposed to open at 4:30. They didn't actually open until 5:45.
No.
I don't know who the hell screwed that one up, but something screwed up. They had to hold stage time for a bunch of the opening bands because not everybody, the whole bunch of people hadn't been let in yet.
This is very similar here. There's been a few local gigs that I've been to of late where it's even a running joke. People say, by local gigs, I mean, you know, reasonable size, like Manning Bar and all that sort of stuff. The thing that's really annoying is when you've got people who are going on, and this is going to the bands now as well. Oh, what time are we on? Oh, you guys are on at 8:05. Okay, what time do the doors open? Well, they're supposed to open at 7, but they only opened actually at 7:45. That's right, so there's going to be no one in here. So you've got the first band to play, might be playing a reasonably big gig that they've been hoping for quite some time, and because of the disorganisation of one fuckwit, they can't do their job properly, so it just leaves a bit of taste in the mouth. And it's even got to the point where there are certain touring companies, and I won't say the names of them, where it's literally a joke. It's like, oh, this is a insert touring company here gig, so nothing's going to run on time.
That's not good.
No. And that this is bode well. This all comes under gig etiquette. Like gig etiquette is not just from the fans, it's from
absolutely the bands, from the promoters.
It's from, you know, don't, here's a good one, because this happened with Shannon Knoll recently. Don't swear at the people in the crowd. It's not gonna do any good for you. Just grit and bear it and keep going.
Someone bottled him, didn't they? Wasn't that how it started? Bottled him?
I think so. I didn't see the whole thing. I just saw the video.
Then he sort of implied that he wanted to fuck the bloke's mother or something. I think that's how it ended.
Probably. I don't know. I just saw the video of him going off. Sorry, I think we've yelled and screamed enough about gig etiquette now.
yep, I think we have.
We've yelled at enough crowds. I think we've come to the point now where we need to do these album recommendations. As I've said before, we're going to do them bi-weekly now or every fortnight. What have you got for me, Hoggy?
I've got an interesting one for you.
Okay.
This is a debut studio album of a collaboration between John Anderson and Roine Stolt. Roine being of transatlantic fame and the Flower Kings.
Yeah.
This particular album is called Invention of Knowledge.
Right. Okay.
It's released in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a few years old now.
Yeah.
I think you should give this one a listen.
All right. I'll check that out.
What have you got for me?
I'm actually going to give you two this week. One single and one album as well. Now, the album I actually recommended to the boys from Genetics 2 weeks ago in the podcast 2 weeks ago. The album is an album by a band called Sunchild. It was released about 2 weeks ago now. It had actually just been released when we recorded the episode with them. These guys are from the Ukraine, so it fits in nice and perfectly with where you've just been. The album is called Messages from Afar, The Division and Illusion of Time.
All right.
Yeah, that's all I'll say about it. I'd like to see what you think. Now, the single I want to recommend to you, and wait before you roll your eyes, is a single by Pendulum.
Pendulum, okay. Yeah.
Now, Pendulum are a drum and bass kind of outfit from the UK. However, they've got an album called The Reworks. So it's a whole bunch of people basically remixing their songs. And there's a version that they do of a very famous song that they've got called Crush with Devin Townsend.
Ooh, okay.
And it is damn good. So I'm going to give you that
Okay, so this is Pendulum Crush, the Devin Townsend remix.
Correct.
All right.
I really like it. I found it the other night and I was like, oh. The rest of the album I think you'll hate. Yeah. And you know what? If you've got time, we can go back to the Above and Beyond thing. I'll link you the orchestral version where they played in Royal Albert Hall, and they do all the songs from that album that I got you to listen to with an orchestra as opposed to, you know, electronica. Yep. It'd be really interesting to get your opinion on that as well. So there we have it for another week. Thank you guys so much for listening in. These last two episodes have been a lot of one of us sort of talking. So from here on in, we're going to be going to a fortnightly schedule. So one a week was just becoming too taxing, to be really honest with you guys, on our schedules. So we decided to go to one every 2 weeks, and we're going to be introducing a couple of new things. So we're going to be doing a news segment, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. We'll be reviewing a new album that has come out that week, or during that fortnightly period. And we're just going to be talking everything prog and music related as usual. Now, Hoggy, what are we going to be talking about next time?
This topic is one that I've had in mind for quite a while now. A lot of the bands that we tend to talk about are generally focused in the sort of quote-unquote Western world, either being Australian, obviously, or American or British. And I thought it'd be good fun to take a bit of a look around at some of the bands that are not from those kind of, and some bands from Eastern Europe. Perfect. Obviously, as we've spoken about on the podcast before, I've got some pretty close connections to Eastern Europe, and there are a lot of bands in that part of the world that are generally very progressive and doing some really interesting things. So I thought it'd be good fun to have a chat about some of those.
Absolutely. And with that album that I recommended you, probably a first point that we can we can go from there and get deeper and deeper and deeper into the music world of prog in these non-Western countries, if you will.
That's what we're going to be talking about next time.
Perfect. Well, look, we thank you so much for tuning in again. Always great to see you guys and you know, interact with us on Facebook and Twitter and email. And if we've said anything in this episode that you found you thought was a little bit weird, or you know, you just didn't agree with it, by all means, let us know. We'd love to hear from you, no matter what your opinions were all about, including pretty well everyone. Yes. In this podcast. So
just before we go, I'm going to point everyone to our Twitter account. When we recorded those previous episodes, I hadn't set the Twitter account up yet. I have now, and you can find us on Twitter at 98FM. That's all one word, at 98FM, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Perfect.
So go and follow us on Twitter, and please, you know, The other part as well that I wanted to just quickly mention I did have an email from someone asking what's the best way to help us sort of further our reach with the show. All the advice I've got from all the podcasters that I know and listen to, the best way that you can do that is to rate the show on iTunes. So please go to iTunes and leave us a review and rate the show, and that helps us to expand the audience of the show.
Absolutely. Please,
so please do that.
And definitely share it around to your friends and family and people who are, you know, keen to have a listen, and even if they're not keen to have a listen, force it upon them. any help that we can get for you guys from you guys would be absolutely fantastic, because we do have some pretty big plans for this podcast going forward, and we'd love to be able to see those materialize. So thank you again so much for listening in. My name's David Ellis.
My name is Alex Hogg. We'll see you all in a fortnight's time.
See you then.